At last month's Site Village exhibition held here in the UK, a British company, Sound Foresight, launched a new and innovative product which employs ultrasound to provide a blind person with tactile feedback about obstacles in their immediate environment. We joined the launch during the question and answer session and first hear from Jane, Managing Director of Sound Foresight, responding to the question, in view of the £400 price tag for the UltraCane, is it possible to try before you buy?
The question of price is obviously a very important one, and we looked at it in many different ways. In terms of trying the cane, what we're actually doing is putting together a training programme that's being written, the curriculum's being written by a gentleman called Bruce Blash, who the professionals among you may know is the author and editor of the Orientation and Mobility Bible. I think it's called The Big Red Book. And he's running this training program, and everybody who attends that, every professional who attends that, has been given a cane and the training course so that they can go back to where they live, whether that be in the UK or Canada, America, Germany, wherever. They can then in turn help people to try the cane, have an evaluation of the cane, and in turn train other people to use the cane. So we're trying very much to A, make that very possible, Michael, and secondly to actually put back into the profession and the community that's helped us so much. Thank you. Any more questions?
Yes,
just on the end there.
My name's Brian Payne.
Hello, Brian.
I have, before I ask my question, I should say that I've had a lot of experience of previous ultrasonic devices, because I used the sonic guide in the invention of Professor Leslie Kay from 1978 till 1995. One of the things that I found with previous devices was that the ultrasonics took a lot of bashing, and that servicing was therefore a very regular necessity. Can you tell us something about the servicing probabilities of the ultrasonic?
Certainly. I'm going to split this question probably between myself and Dean, who is the ultrasonic expert, but let me tell you from the product design point of view, if you like. First of all, the cane has not been designed to require any servicing at all. Before you bring a product to market like this, they have to be fairly robust and go through several environmental tests. These are vibration tests, water ingress tests, dust ingress, drop tests, you name it, varying heat temperature tests. As you've heard, we've used it in Toronto in very, very low temperatures. So a lot of tests like that have to be gone through, especially if you want to market in America, where you have to conform to Food and Drug Agency standards. So therefore, we feel that we have, from day one, a fairly robust product. What I'd like to do now is hand over to Dean to talk perhaps about the robustness of ultrasonics.
It's a very good question, because ultrasonics does take, there's all the very delicate components involved. But electronics has come on a long way, even in the past 10 years, in terms of making things much more reliable. And also, as Jane said, in terms of the requirements now for issues like water ingress, drop testing, vibration testing, is that we've tried to engineer in or anticipate really where all the problems will happen, which bits are the most vulnerable aspects. And we've been very fortunate, having a long trials phase with various designs and various changes to those designs. So we feel that we've ironed out 99% of all the small vulnerabilities in the device itself. Obviously, you can never compensate for that 1% that get run over by a steamroller. But we're fairly confident that what we've got is a product which is robust. The replaceable parts, the tip, for example, they're all industry standard replaceables. We use replaceable components. So we feel hopefully that the cane is robust and shouldn't need tweaking across its lifetime.
Thank you, Dean.
Now,
the gentleman with the headset on,
his
hand up. Yes, how can we help you?
Hello there, good morning. Dave Williams, ACB Radio. My question is, did you find during your trials that the UltraCane was suitable for all cane users?
Okay, thank you, David. I don't know if everybody heard the question there, but Dave was asking if through the trials everybody found the cane suitable. And no, we didn't. What we did was try to find an evaluation group of people that were very representative of all the visually impaired people. So that was depending on their age, what the cause of the vision impairment was, where they lived, whether it was rural, whether it was downtown Washington DC. Everybody was different, and everybody, even with the same condition, would have slight variances, as you all know, with their sight. So, no, not everybody. The one group that we had concerns about ourselves were the people with diabetic retinopathy, where, as you know, the touch and the fingertips can be affected. And we found in those cases only 50% of people could satisfactorily use the cane. But on the other hand, we got 50% that did, which was a lot more than we'd actually expected to be able to. Other than that, we couldn't pinpoint a group that best suited the cane. We were hoping that we might get a group with a certain condition or in a certain environment, a certain age even, that took to it, so that we could concentrate our effort in talking to those people. But in fact, it's much broader than that. It seems to be that people who've used a cane or people who haven't used a cane, they could take to it and use it, and it suited them very well. Thank you.
I'm just wondering,
right. The question is about, have we got special canes for people who are deaf and blind? The wonderful thing about the ultra cane is that it is tactile feedback. And therefore, what we found in the trials were, again, we took people who were representative of the population, 35% of the people who were deaf are also blind. So we made sure that we covered that statistic. And again, we found that because it's tactile and it's strong, you're in no doubt that there's something there. So we found it worked very well for them. So no special pain, no. So if you have it, Joe, can I have it there? I'll come to you in a minute, Joe.
In the trials of the care, was there many children that used the care?
Right. As you've seen from the brief look at the cane, the handle is a certain size. And the handle is a certain size for two reasons. First of all, we needed somewhere to fit all the electronics. But secondly, all our research and focus groups showed us that the fatter a handle was, the more comfortable it is. It stands to reason, the more contoured something is, and the fatter it is, the more comfortable it is to hold. And comfort was very important to us. We also learned through talking to the profession that a lot of people who are visually impaired are over 60, and therefore they have other issues. There are only 25% of people are what we call vanilla blind, where that's their only cause of impairment. And we found these professionals actually adding to the handle on the traditional cane latex bandaging to make it fatter, so that the grip was fatter. So for those reasons, the handle had to be a certain size. Now, when we looked at that, we thought that might make it difficult for children, so we initially didn't focus on children. However, Lorna's father contacted us, Paul Harvey here, and said she was very keen to try this. So we said, well, we'll make an exception. I think at the time Lorna was 9. And we said, we'll see how she'll cope. Because what we think we need to do is to do a little bit more research and say, is simply scaling down the handle size all that a child might require, or are there other issues there? And we think we're going to look at that especially. So there will be people like Lorna, maybe 9, 10, 15 years, who use the cane, but it's going to be on an individual basis, and we'll look at children who say, I think especially. Thank you. Joe, you had a question here.
Yeah, Joe, well, I'm from the Republic of Ireland, editor of an audio magazine, and if you remember, we did a feature on the magazine earlier on. Is it possible for the ultra cane to do text steps down?
Right, okay, an interesting question, because one of the obstacles that is a problem with people visually impaired are holes in the ground, steps down, this sort of thing. Now, currently, as we understand it, there is no technology that will do this, and I'm going to hand over to Dean here to perhaps describe why ultrasound is the same as any other technology in this instance.
Yeah, one of the things that I'd like people to remember is that this technology is the start, hopefully, of a long technological road of improvement and using this type of technology to develop things further. We look very, very hard at step downs. We try a lot of different techniques. One of the issues with step downs is that in order to detect something that's falling away, you have to know that something is there to begin with and then discover that it's gone. The basic premise of the way the cane operates is that it assumes there's nothing there until it can see something, then it lets you know. So they're actually working in two rather opposite ways. So in the present incarnation of the cane, we couldn't find any reasonable technology of doing both things simultaneously without adding extra bulk and new transducers and more weight and so on. But that's not to say that the issue we've decided is a trivial one and we're not going to look at it. This cane is the start of a road development. It's the product, the first part, and what we anticipate is a long line of developing products which will look at all of those very, very serious issues. So at the moment, no, we can't detect a step down, but it's very high on our agenda for the next iteration of research and development to look at that very serious as a problem and see how we can incorporate it into future designs.
Okay, thank you.
Hiya, in my experience, electronic products seem to have like a certain amount of time before they tend to sort of not function like humans and readers and stuff. Is the cane sort of meant to be for a lifetime, or would it sort of be for a period of time in which most users would be able to use the cane?
Okay, again, I might head over to Dean. We'll see how we go on this one. When you design a product like this, you come up with a product specification of what it must do. And one of the things that you look at is what is its lifespan. And with all electronic devices, the average lifespan in development is something like 3 to 5 years. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't get lifetime way beyond that. It's an average, isn't it? It's a mean there. There will be some that maybe are at fluke and break before that. But otherwise, we would expect them to work well forward. And we don't know, ultimately, how long that will be. But it's certainly designed to last a certain amount of time. Okay. Yeah, interesting question.
Could you repeat the question?
The reason why snow and rain might be an issue is because you're needing the cane to be open to the environment for the ultrasound to work. But the concern would be that rain or snow would block the sonar itself. Now, we've trialled this in Toronto in January, where the chap who was using it one day actually was getting the train to work, got off the train, and there was 10 inches of snow, and it worked absolutely fine. We found once in the trials that lasted several months and over several years, that once we had it stop through rain. What we've done is, where the sonar comes out of the cane, we've put a grid in front of that, a mesh, if you like, to protect it from perhaps water ingress in that way. If droplets kind of block the holes in the grid, then it would potentially, if enough blocked it, then it could potentially stop the sonar. By blotting it with a tissue, you simply absorb the water and it works, it continues to work. So it would not be an issue. The beauty of this ultra cane is that if anything ever were to happen with the electronics, it's still a cane. It's still a primary aid and you can get home safely. Okay. Yes,
I have about 6 questions, but half of them have been answered.
Okay.
Alan Cranley has left, and he mentioned his walking stick. But when he's asked in relation to future development, whether you should possibly consider putting this technology into the normal standard cane, whether or not mobile phones might make the tankers vibrate, I've seen it happen on some technology. And also the angle of the beam, whether there is actually any width or whether it's purely straightforward. Does it cover the full body width of the individual?
Right. Dean, would you like to talk about the ultrasound?
Yeah, in terms of mobile phones, it's been pretty safe. Because of the nature of the electronics, we have to screen everything extremely carefully. So the whole of the inside, because it now has to fulfil a very, very stringent EMC regulation within the European Union and also the equivalent in America, is it doesn't emit radio waves. It's not sensitive to radio waves, so it can work in a radio environment. In terms of the width of the user, this was actually our biggest development problem. This gave us the biggest headache, and there are some people here from Kinetic who helped us develop the angle of transducers. We were constantly trying to tune it, because you don't want it to be too wide. You pick up everything, you don't pick up doors. You don't want it to be too narrow, because otherwise you have to move it around to detect thin obstacles and you miss them. So we've tuned it very carefully so that as you're walking forward, roughly about the maximum range, you're getting about 1.5 body widths. So if you aim it straight in front of you, that's your access window. You should be able to walk through that window with confidence. Obviously, if you move the cane around and scan it, you can then pick up objects to the side. So it's great for picking it up for doors, for example, but at the same time, it has enough coverage. So if there's a traffic sign with a pole in the middle of the pavement, and there are several on my walk home to the train station, in your window of walking forwards, it will pick it up. You don't have to be pointing directly at it. It will see your clear path forward. So we've tuned the angle of width really to a human shape. So it's also long. So it's taller, but it's narrower.
Okay. Thank you, Dean. Right, in the interest of time, let's have just one more question.
Can I have a supplementary to that? Really, in terms of the angle, I assume that you can
think
about the fact
that
volcanoes are always
scanned. Dean? Yeah, the premise was that we didn't want people, what we wanted was a cane where you didn't have to scan at all, so that your forward window is completely clear. Now, obviously, in working with a lot of our PI volunteers, we found, not surprisingly, people get a lot of information from scanning as well. So with the implementation of the long cane, it's a combination of finding out what's beyond the end of your cane, but also knowing what's immediately apparent in front of you on the pavement. So if the pavement's uneven, you still detect that through scanning slightly. You don't have to scan as far as you did, or sweep as far as you did before, because you don't have that clear window in front of you. But if you wish to sweep, then it's entirely up to you. So what we wanted was a device that people could pick up, which was intuitive to the user, which we didn't fully prescribe exactly how you could use it. You can use it in sweeping as you did before, you can sweep less if you want to, but it gives you an extra reach beyond the cane tip. Now obviously, it's one of those issues that is constantly under review in research and development, is from the first product, is user feedback is incredibly important to us. If we're going to carry on and generate lots and lots of new devices in the future and incorporating all sorts of exciting technology, what do you as users want? That's what's important to us to know as a company. If you want to sweep more, have a narrower beam width, that's great, that's important information. For the moment, the information for the feedback that we've got, we've tuned that so you can still sweep, but you don't have to sweep as far as you did.
Following the questions and answers, ACB Radio caught up with Jane, Managing Director of Sound for Sight, the company launching the UltraCane.
Can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of this product? Where did the concept come from? And really, we heard there in the Q&A section that it's taken 6 years to come to fruition. Where did it come from? And can you just summarise for us what's happened over the last 6 years, if that's at all possible?
Okay, well, I'll do that very well. Basically, the idea came from some academics at Leeds University who all had an interest in ultrasound, whether it was used in engineering or in zoology to bats and echolocation, or even measuring the freshness of food. And they got together and decided that they thought that they could perhaps produce an echolocation system that worked as well for humans who are visually impaired as it did for bats or indeed dolphins. So that was back in 1998, and as a result of many, many trials with many visually impaired people and the professionals in Germany, around the UK, around the USA and in Canada, and latterly in Australia, we've actually built up, through many prototypes and focus groups, built up what the UltraCane is today.
Okay. Sound for Sight, you're a UK company, right?
Yes.
Yep. So people listening to this around the world, if they wanted to find out more about this technology, I'm thinking particularly the United States, where the core of our audience are.
Yes, of course.
How would you suggest people proceed?
Right. We have both a website, an email address, and a telephone number I could give you.
Right. We'll get to that at the end.
Okay.
So there is contact point.
Absolutely.
Are you yourselves the sole dealer at the moment of
Yes, at the moment what we're doing is we're talking to a number of interested organisations. Mm-hmm. It's very important to us that we select the correct distribution partners, if you like, people who will be at all the shows where people go so they can try and test the cane. So we're talking to those people, and we'll gradually be putting different contracts and relationships in place. But it can be obtained through the website. You can order through there today.
So, somebody from a distributor of assistive technology in the US who they might be thinking, great, we want to know about this, we want to come and have a look at this, you know, with a view to distributing. What sort of company are you looking for in the US to work with in a partnership? I mean, clearly, you want somebody with a background in mobility products or not.
That could be helpful, but it doesn't necessarily preclude them. I think what's important is that they have the enthusiasm to deal with the same market sector as us, so complementary products. So it doesn't necessarily have to be mobility. And we'd be delighted to hear from anybody. I think what also is important is that they can do the geographic coverage that from the UK, we're not as familiar as they are, obviously, in the US. So I think it's coverage and their enthusiasm with complementary products.
I want to come on to talk about the product itself in a couple of moments, but first, tell me a little bit about Sound for Sight. This isn't a company that I'm very familiar with.
No.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I sense that you're a relatively small company,
mm-hmm.
And you've done all the R&D yourselves. How's that even been possible? Because R&D is hugely expensive, and of course, you've been looking to ship quite a lot of product in the first year following launch to even begin to recoup some of your costs, or have you had some help with the development costs?
Let me say that. Yes, we are a fairly small company. In fact, the UltraCane is our only product. Although we have a development plans, we haven't pushed the boundaries of the technology yet, for example. We know there are other products that we'd like to come to market with, but we have concentrated purely on the UltraCane to start with. In terms of the funding, you're right, it can be a bit of a nightmare for a new company with a new idea, but we've been very fortunate in that initially we have some grant funding, some support within the UK, and we've been very well supported by private individuals who've believed in this as a project, and they in turn have invested in the company. So that's how we've done it. To date, we've spent probably 1.2 million. You know, it's impossible to bring a new electronic aid like this to market without spending any less. So that's what we've managed to do.
Okay, well, sticking with the filthy subject of money then, what would somebody be looking to pay for an UltraCane?
Well, what we've done is we've, bearing in mind what I've just said, we've spent on development.
Quite a bit of money, yeah.
Yeah, we've done a lot of research looking at comparable products and other aids that people may use. And what's affordable? We asked all of our user groups and focus groups and people on the trial, and we've come up with a price which we fixed as a manufacturer's recommended price in sterling of £399. And we're delighted with this, given the fact there's been such a huge investment in the R&D, and given that electronic aids historically have had such large price tags and therefore not been affordable to those that really want to be able to use them.
My understanding of the product is that essentially it's based around the familiar long cane that blind people have, and then there are some add-ons to that. There are some electronics in the handle, and then presumably some sensing. Can you describe physically what the product is like?
Sure.
and how people interact with it?
Yeah, what we've done is we've taken the regular long white cane. It's a carbon graphite cane. You can have whatever tip you require on the bottom there. We've put a roller tip on because 80% of people actually use the roller tip. What we've then done is we've added the handle, which is where all of the electronics is. So the cane is a regular long white cane which collapses just in this usual way. We've set the handle at a 15 degree angle to the cane shaft itself, which is encouraged to help people stand straight.
Right.
We're all about trying to give people confidence, and if your deportment is better, then it stands to reason that you know, your confidence will be greater.
Is that purely for a mobility reason or other technological reasons preferable?
It's a fact of research that deportment is better if you stand up straight, no matter if we're a ballet dancer or
I was thinking about the angle of the handle. The angle of the handle there, because
we then angled within that,
right.
Obviously the ultrasound,
yes.
Transducer.
Right.
There are two sensors in there, each send and receive sonar,
yes.
And each one goes out. The forward direction is covering two ranges, 4 and 2 meters from the end of the tip, then we are looking upwards to protect anybody from anything that could touch shoulder or head height. So those are the two things it's looking for: forward, the direction of travel, and upwards. How it gives feedback is by vibrating buttons that are in the handle. So you can hold the cane in the normal way with a normal grip, and there are two buttons on there. Depending on which button vibrates, tells you which direction the object is in. Depending on the intensity of that vibration, tells you how far away it is. Because we're measuring the sonar, the return, how long it takes the sonar to come back to the electronics in the handle in there. And that's simply all it does. Anything more than that, and we believe wouldn't enable somebody to be able to go about their business at their normal speed. All of our sort of test protocols were saying, here is a whole list of objects that we wanted to be able to detect, from a person sideways on to a brick wall to a wheelie bin to a trash can on the road to a pedestal chair in an office.
Parked car.
All of those wing mirrors. You know, we used a willow tree branches, quite fine branches for the overhead. And we said that we had to be able to detect those at 4 miles an hour, because we work out that the average, say, a guide dog user who walks a bit faster than perhaps a cane user.
Right.
So that's covering something like 4 metres in 3 seconds. and that was our test protocol.
So the cane is already calibrated when the user receives it.
Yes.
Do you anticipate that in the future the user will be able to tailor that to their own requirements, depending on the sorts of environments or the kind of speed that they move up through that environment?
Or? It's interesting, yes, because I can see how that could be desirable, because obviously people have visual impairments that are altering all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'd like to be able to see, and we could actually do with the technology, is using Bluetooth technology, you could download and reset the settings on the cane for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody with retinitis pigmentosa, for example, might need more help and more priority given to the left and right, where they haven't got much vision, they've just got the core vision. So we looked at that. We felt that if we did that on day one of the product coming out, it might be too much and might blow people's minds if you know they have to go to a resource centre and get this sort of thing done. But in the future, that's how we see it developing. That's how we see it going, yeah.
Excellent. Well, ACB Radio hopes to be able to road test one of these Ultra Canes in the not-too-distant future. Tell us about the launch today, Jay. Yes. How's it gone? You guys obviously must be, you know, thrilled to bits that finally this day has come, and the anticipation for this must have been tremendous.
It is indeed, yes. And in fact, thanks also to ACB, who in the US did support the trials. We worked with Chris Gray as your president.
Yes,
he took part in the trials in San Francisco. So amongst other people that ACB introduced us to, thanks to that. And it's a shame they can't be here today in the UK, because I think you can probably hear there's a whole group of people here having a wonderful time. They've really enjoyed hearing about something that they've designed, in effect, with their input. What we'd really like to do is next year at CSUN, we'd like to hold a US launch. So perhaps some of your members would like to come to that.
Well, Jane, thanks very much. Is there anything I haven't asked you which you wanted to add? Of course, we'll get your contact details in a moment.
Yes, of course. We'll do the contact details. I think that's the most important thing, and then people can ask the questions that they like.
They want to ask, absolutely.
Yeah. The website is www.ultracane.com. Also, there's an email address, which is info@... Sound Foresight. Now that's one word and spelled soundforesight.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a telephone number.
It's quite refreshing to hear you spelling Foresight. Usually in internet days, it's like you get the number to replace these.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yes, no.
And the telephone number.
It's quite traditional, really. But it'll be 44 for the UK.
That's right, yes.
And then it is 1925 446 151. That's 44 1925 446 151.
And obviously for people listening in the UK, just drop the leading 44 and replace it with a 0. Jane, thanks very much.
David, thank you.
Thank you.